Always Record, episode 34. Today's scheduled guest, Jay Widener, will not be appearing. Hopefully we can reschedule sometime in the future. So Alan, David, and I continue the conversation. Hope you enjoy.
To get away, they take a holiday from the neighborhood. Have a flight to Miami.
God, that sounds like a really good country song. I'm sure Virginia's fine.
Right. Exactly.
Or even a fucking album.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting place. I mean, you know, whatever. It's, I find I have a horrible bias, as much as I try not to, is that being from New York and never, like, really thought of, I don't have, like, some elitist New York attitude. I'm a poor guy from New York, so, I mean, I actually lived, past tense now, I actually lived very close to where they shot, you ever see Coming to America?
Yes, I have.
Do you know the McDougals or whatever? McDowells? McDowells, I think it's called.
It is McDowells.
McDowells. I lived a few blocks away from where they filmed it's actually a Wendy's that they pretended was McDowells. I lived a few blocks away from there. So if you've seen Coming to America, that's basically like what I'm used to.
Yeah, that's a rough little patch of land.
No. Okay, so what I'm saying is, my bias is that's normal, and when I go outside of that, everything looks like Walmart, Target, America Land.
Okay.
I'm saying no matter what I see, so I have this horrible bias is that everything outside of that perimeter looks kind of the same to me. I have a hard time differentiating.
So
between
Virginia is Des Moines is whatever. It's just all the cookie cutter America thing.
Right. And I'm sure, like, I want to find those differences. I'm just saying I have a sort of hard, like, of course, there's, like, some cultural stuff that bleeds through, like, how the people, you know, accents or music, you know, obviously, you know, your country music in the South or your, you know, sort of more Baptist churches. And I don't know, you know, there are different things that add some flavor to each region, but for me, like, being outside of there, I just feel like completely out of my sort of comfort zone. Not in a bad way, not in a good way, just like, okay, I'm here. but it seems oddly all very flat or two-dimensional to me in a way. But now, that being said, I'm staying with my in-laws here for the last week, and they're awesome. So, like, basically, as long as I'm in their house, it's like I'm with family. I get my wife has three sisters, but two of them still live at home, 12 and I think, I don't know, 16, something like that. And they're just, like, a lot of fun. So I've been doing, helping my 12-year-old sister-in-law with math homework and, you know, playing board games and watching cartoons and things like that. So this is, like, a really wonderful family environment here. And then I'm saying, like, when we have to go, you know, yesterday I was in Walmart, and Walmart is as alien to me as being on Jupiter. So, you know, we're there, and I just sort of, I had totally psyched, after being here for a week and a half, I had totally psyched myself up for the Walmart experience, whereas my wife, every aisle we're going down, she's like freaking out. Why are they selling this? Why are they, you know, what? Just totally unhealthy garbage that this is what most people are eating. And I'm just sort of like, I accept it. It's the whole store. And then I get to the next aisle and she's like, what? Oh my God, look at this stuff. And I'm like, it's the whole store. Just, let's just, it's not like this aisle, it's the whole store. Let's just get what we need and go.
You were sort of like, you know, the adept who could walk across the hot coals. You're just walking across, let's just get to the end. And and she's hot foot dancing on every single burning ember.
But I don't know if I just felt more like, not like the adept who just walked across. It was like, I guess in one way, but in a sad sort of way of, I just accept that this is terrible. I'm completely desensitized and my shock is gone. I find this whole thing nauseating. Can we just finish this process and we,
yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's not, I don't know, it's just a very interesting, because being, hey, David's here.
Hi.
Hey, good morning, sir.
Good morning. I'm downloading a new version of Skype, so I don't know if that'll interfere.
Okay.
If I might have to restart it, but.
But, so this has made, this whole thing has been interesting because ultimately my wife really wants to be outside of New York. And as I said, for me, anything outside of New York is America. There's the United States and there's New York and there's outside of the United States. If I'm going to leave New York, I want to leave the United States.
Okay. Okay.
That's my feeling.
I like that. Yeah.
It's like, let's go to a foreign country or be in New York. But like everything, the rest of this sort of, continental landmass here is all kind of a big blur to me of like, well, there's America and there's not America. So, so this has been kind of hard to find, you know, have this conversation of, well, where are we moving? We're going to move to Oregon because of the job there. And then when that fell through, so like, where are we going? We've kind of bounced back a number of things back and forth over the last week and a half, basically trying to figure out, I need to be somewhere that's a big enough, I mean, I don't need a big city, but I need something that's big enough that there's going to be work there and, you know, possibly some public transportation or whatever, you know. Otherwise, my point is, if we have to buy a car, then whatever money we save from not paying New York rent, we're paying just as much in car insurance and gas.
Do you mind me asking, how much was your rent for the apartment that you had?
I had a shoebox that was $1,000 a month.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I see outside of New York, you can get, you know, for $700, I can get a whole house.
Yeah.
However, my point is, hey, that's great, but we're still only two people. We don't need a whole house. And if I spend $700 on rent and then another $700 on car insurance, well, now I'm essentially paying $1,400. And, ooh, I have an extra room to, what am I going to do? Tap dance in it?
Get, like, 10 cats. That's what most of middle America does with that extra room, I think.
You know, I mean, once we have kids, it'll be a different story. But for now that we don't, I don't know. So that's sort of my concern is like, hey, wow, rent's so much cheaper. But if there's some place that I need to have a car, then it's basically, I just view that as that's my rent going up.
Yeah.
But I think we've decided we actually have reservation somewhere, so we're leaving on Sunday for Asheville, North Carolina.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're gonna stay. We have reservations in a place to stay for a week, and we're going to go down there and spend a week trying to find an apartment. And because trying to do stuff over the internet from distance is kind of not working. Everywhere that I try and contact, and they say, "Well, when can you come look at the apartment?" And say, "Well, actually, I'm not there." And you know, blah blah blah, and then they want to meet you, and they can't. You can't even put in an application for some of these places without being there. So I'm like, all right, let's just go get a hotel for a week and spend a week trying to get an apartment, and then we'll have a place to actually go. So we're not bringing our stuff.
Yes, you're just going to set up a home post and be able to get roots down so that you can
look
for work, I guess.
Yeah, that's basically where I'm at. Yeah,
you want to get citizenship somewhere? Outside of the U.S.?
My wife, actually, she was born in Japan, so if I went there and got married, I could have Japanese citizenship pretty easily.
Dude.
But she doesn't want to do that, only for the fact that she was born there, but her father was from here, she currently holds dual citizenship, and if we did that, she'd lose the dual citizenship.
Oh,
and
So,
the other process is for me to try and do all the paperwork stuff. Basically, our plan, what we've discussed many times, is where we would like to end up in Japan, but it's so much more expensive than even New York. So our plan is to build for that, save for that. I need to learn more Japanese. My Japanese is terrible. And then just sort of that's where we'd like to end up.
Cool.
We have she has family there that can sort of help us find a place to land, but they all, when I was there a few years ago, and they were just saying, like, if you're a foreigner, you're gonna have a really hard time finding work. And which, whatever, I'm to one extent I'm fine doing, but basically if I went to Japan, it would be the equivalent of a Mexican immigrant coming here and, working 14 hours a day. And
The majority of American transplants go there and they teach English?
Yeah, it takes a few months for that to all go through, which I've looked into, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely an option. It's just something that I can't do, in the current situation where it's wait a second, I'm suddenly homeless, okay, let's pick a place to live, I can't just go do that. That process takes months to fill out all the applications.
I think you should move to Berkeley.
What's in Berkeley?
Jobs. It's awesome. I think you'd like Berkeley. This is my suggestion.
Well, my wife has been feeling California, but we're actually heading on Sunday to North Carolina.
Oh, shit. You should say hi to my sister. She lives there.
Where?
Charlotte.
Oh, really? Okay, we're looking in Asheville, which is very close to Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
But our thought is, so we basically were looking to end up on the West Coast. I mean, my wife's like, hey, let's go to the West Coast. I'm like, okay, sure. But basically, to do a cross-country drive in the middle of January, going particularly to the Northwest, and I don't even have a driver's license, this is potentially, not a good idea. So,
okay, go ahead.
No, so we were going to do, and then we realized, if we have to rent a car, and if I'm basically found out that for a rental car, you're putting whoever the licensed driver is on it. So if I were to drive the rental car and God forbid anything happened, then my wife's liable. So I don't want to do that.
Right.
And, I don't mind doing something illegal. I just don't want it to affect someone else. So,
My friend Jacob is in New York right now, and eventually he's gonna drive back. I don't know. I shouldn't put that out there for him, and maybe he'll take the train. I don't know what he's doing. I just know that I have a friend that'll eventually I would imagine in the not too distant future will be headed here. So you could get a driver, you know, that's one option. If somebody, you could also put an ad out for somebody who's needs to go here and be like, hey, you know, you can arrange deals like that. I've had friends that have done that when they've gone cross country.
Right, just someone to split the driving with them.
Yeah, or to do it as the deal if you can't do it. If you can't do it and you're like, hey, and we'll pay for the rent-a-car or something, you know?
Right.
That works.
Yeah, we had actually, there's a service that, you know, like, let's say someone moves cross-country and they need to have their car driven. So if there was someone who needed a car driven from Baltimore to Portland, and we were trying to get that, but it fell through. But that would have worked out pretty nicely, because then it's like you're not paying for the rental car. You still have to pay for gas, but you know, you get it. It's basically a free rental car.
Cool.
But I think what we're just going to do is we're going to try Asheville for a little while, see what happens, and then come the summer, maybe we'll keep going to the West Coast or whatever. I think we're just going to try something for now.
Cool.
Something new.
It sounds like where you're at, you can't really be there for very long, so go for it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
There's something very biblical going on with you, Alan Green, right now.
You're like an exile. Alan in exile.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, I mean, yeah, there is something, I mean, I'm having my 2012 apocalypse. It's just, it came a week or so late. You know what I mean? There is something odd. Like, so I'm not sure. I'm curious to hear what you think, what you mean by something oddly biblical. But I sort of feel that myself. But I'm curious what you mean by that.
Just the whole circumstances of how you got, for lack of a more sensitive way to put it, you got the boot out of New York. I mean, you had an opening, you had an invitation, and it fell apart, and it just left you high and fucking dry. I mean, just literally, to the worst degree. And, you know, it sent you south to Virginia. How close are you to Washington, D.C.?
Oh, we're like 2 hours south of D.C., so we passed through D.C. on the way here.
And isn't the CIA in Langley in Virginia?
Oh, yeah, that's really close to here.
They're calling you home.
Oh, that's what you meant by biblical. Okay.
Well, there's just like, you know, I mean, you can't script this shit. Again, I mean, just from an outsider's perspective, just seeing, like, you know, in the Indiana Jones movie where the red line
oh,
goes
yeah,
across
yeah,
the
yeah.
map. And now Alan goes to Virginia.
Oh, and trust me, that whole CIA thing hasn't been lost on me. I mean, like, yeah, you're driving through this place, there's all these military and intelligence agency things. It's kind of creepy. But, I mean, it's more like, it's very much like a suburban, so there's a lot of, like, military families here. I don't really feel the presence of, you know, there's no, actually I did see some black helicopters, but that's besides the point. So but it wasn't like, oh my god, they're after me. It was just like, okay, we're near these bases and stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of like military families, and it's hard for me because I want to be able to have this crossover where we can have a conversation with anybody. I feel like what we do, we can essentially relate to anybody. And at the same time, it's really hard for me because, you know, to be on one hand kind of looked down upon as you're the non-Christian entity in this place, and you live this, you know, liberal heathen lifestyle or something like that. And at the same time, to see all these people in the military who I view as they're the murderers. They're less Christian than I am. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know how, it's such sensitive topics. I don't know. So I came down here a few years ago, and there was like, we were invited to someone's house for like a few days. They had like this sort of family gathering in Virginia Beach. And so there's like a bunch of these families from around Virginia all like renting out the same place for a few days. And then they're all talking to me about, you know, have you found Jesus and blah, blah, blah. And it just starts these conversations. And I'm like, I'd really prefer not to have these conversations. Like, I don't see that this goes anywhere good. But of course, they want to have these conversations. So I said, okay, you want to have these conversations, I'm going to tell you how I feel. And it always comes, this is why it's very interesting to me. This is a point Chris Knowles has made many times, is that the sort of American Christian evangelical movement is not even really a religious one. It always comes down to politics. It always seems to be a political conversation, not even a religious conversation.
Totally. Yeah, I love it when they knock on my door, because I'm upset when I miss them, when I see that they've been here and they leave the thing. I like to invite them in and talk to them. When they realize that they're not getting to do their regular thing, they usually leave eventually. But I'll be like, I'll make them tea, and I'll sit down with them, and I'll try and have like a scholarly conversation, and I'll pull out the Hebrew Greek Key Study Bible, you know, whatever, and just go through, and I like it. But you got to be you got to know the language in such a way that you're not being offensive, and you be as respectful as possible. But then you go through, and you're like, well, if you have a disagreement, you start out with explaining why, and you know, you don't say like you're wrong. You just say, well, here, let's look at this, and then you show them right away why your opinion might differ. But that's a whole other thing.
But David, see, my issue is that, yeah, you're exactly right. You have to be, and you know, you have to know what it is they're talking about, and be very respectful and all that stuff. And to one extent, I mean, this is where I feel like, when I say I'm out of my element, is my element is, why the fuck should I have to tiptoe around your sensitive feelings? This is a conversation you want to have. So you know what? Why do I have to be so worried about offending you? Is like, it's almost like you're put into a position of apologizing for your belief system, and you have to explain to them why, hey, I'm really sorry, but I disagree with you for this reason. And then they're going to argue with you. But the whole thing is framed in such a way of, you're wrong, but go ahead and try and convince yourself that it's okay to be a sinner or some shit like that. The whole conversation is framed in such a way that I find offensive.
Yeah, it kind of sucks. It's like you have to know to a degree specific verses and specific things that you can throw their way that make them have to stop. Because, I mean, that's just, I was raised with that. So like, they'll say a verse, and then I'll actually like pull out the Bible, like, and be like, okay, well, let's look at that verse in the Greek, you know, and then look up the Greek terms and do a whole thing to explain why something might be able, you could look at something through a different lens. I have difficulty with anything beyond Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. I mean, I have difficulty enough with the gospel, but once I get into, you know, where it turns political, because it does. The Bible itself turns very political. And I will make the argument that I'm like, I don't see Jesus's death on the cross as a call to accept corporal punishment or to accept the rule of government. It was wrong.
Yeah.
It did. So I'm like, I go about a whole strategic way of expressing like simple points like that. And I don't even get into, you know, what's happening in the world right now, on a war level and what I think is right and wrong, or at least I try and avoid that, because that's not what we're like. I bring it back to the level of how, like, because there's this automatic assumption that happens where they're like, all of this that's being talked about applies to the world today, and I agree, yes, it does, but I think that there's some inherent assumptions in like rationalizations and justifications of things that have nothing, that aren't even implied in the text itself. So I don't know where they get that, you know. Of course, I try and avoid just jumping right out and saying I believe the gospel was written by Josephus Flavius as a war strategy. But I mean, I do feel that, and I feel like there's a good argument for that. I kind of like it, though. I wouldn't want to be having to deal with, like, it sucks when you're the complete minority in an area, because automatically it's like assumed, you know, you're everyone else's inward, you know, to a degree. If you're the only one, they can kind of, you can get kind of ganged up on if you're in a situation where there's multiple people who have different, completely different views. It's hard to stand your own and to do it in a respectful way.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I have to say respectful. This is where my wife's family is, and where, you know, and where they have a business down here. I mean, the whole thing is a very sensitive in that respect, you know, trying to do this tap dance, very, very, stay very respectful and at the same time be firm. And I think there's this idea that the problem is that a lot of these people, there's such emphasis put on them going out to preach, you know, like you have to save people. So in a neighborhood where everyone's already saved, you're hungry for a sinner. You need someone, you know. You know, it's like we've been told we have to go out and preach to someone, but there's no one to preach to here.
Right, right, right. They're preaching to the choir.
Yeah. So it's hard. It's hard. But I said, the thing is, I think if I had been in this situation a few years ago, I'd find it much more difficult. I'd be much more sort of argumentative and just coming at it from that sense of trying to literally argue why they're wrong or why any of this sort of stuff. Whereas from the whole sync perspective, I see that they're right. They're absolutely right.
Sure.
In a weird sort of way, they're right. Everyone's sort of right. And
overcome, you know, you can be like, okay, yeah, and like get into the conversation before you even go near presenting a contrary argument. Like, isn't it interesting that Jesus is Yeheshua, which is Yud Heh Vav Heh, which is the name of God in the Old Testament, with a shin in the middle, and then you explain what shin means. You know, it's like, wow, that's, you know, that's interesting. Isn't it interesting that in some of the older artwork, Jesus is portrayed on the Kabbalistic tree of life, and then show them what the tree of life is, and be like, this has, you know, roots. I don't know. It's like you could. It's interesting the way that Christians adopt the Old Testament in the. I mean, they have to, because it's the prophecy in the Old Testament that's apparently being fulfilled in the New Testament, and so it's fun to present different ways of looking at the information. You know, I find it very entertaining and enjoyable, and so I take advantage of that first and foremost before I present any disagreement. I show my interest in what they're immersed in, and that goes a long way. I mean, I found that in India too. As soon as I, you know, people would have a certain attitude towards me initially when I would meet people, but then when I start talking about Patanjali and express an actual interest in their philosophies, people would really open up. They're like, oh, really? You are okay? You know, because they have assumptions. You know, these people assume you're a sinner. You know, and that you don't believe in these things, and you can express interest in the areas that there is actually interest in, and then have a conversation. You know.
Is there some sort of latent thing to most Christians that when they get into a conversation with somebody who knows more, like they know history, they know where the roots and stuff, that you would bring into the conversation, Dave or Alan or I, that when they can get a sense that you're saying something that is informed, academic, it's rooted, that you basically have solid references, but when they take a step back and they look at the total thing, if you're not like wealthier than them, or if you don't have a bigger house than them, then they go, well, that's probably proof that that's just a waste of time. That they they get presented with something that they know deep down is cutting into, like, wow, I might be misinformed or I might have an incomplete picture. You start to fill it in for them, but then they go, well, you have a shitty car or no car, you don't have a lot of money, and so obviously it's irrelevant, and I don't need to, I can stop paying attention to this, and I can go back into my sort of little shell.
Sure. Yeah, if you're Bill from Eyes Wide Shut, and you bring out you're like, no, it's okay, I'm a doctor, you know, and this your house, you can say all about anything you want to, and they'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, there must be something to this. Yeah, people judge things on appearances a lot. It's true.
But that's such an entirely American thing, you know? Like, I think of if you're going to be a student of the Bible and you're going to study it, and if you don't progress to the levels, the deeper levels, and get into the whole Jewish history, you know, what came before, you know, Godfather 1, not just the sequel, and to kind of just trace the true lineage, most people, I think, do that in the sense of, you know, I traced my family tree, and I'm like fourth generation of people who came over on the Mayflower. Mm-hmm. And that, like, excites the shit out of them. That makes them feel that, like, in their body, that they are part of some very important lineage. And, you know, I'm 20% this and 40% this, and I'm the seventh generation relative of a prince of something. And that's like history, or that's going back to their roots. But they never really go back to, like, the intellectual roots of the thing that is a major part of their identity. They don't see it as relevant. They kind of feel like, you know, everything was sort of digested and distilled into the good book and the good word, and I'm saved, and that's the end of that. And they just don't see any merit or any value. And I just think they're just so scared of these wrong paths that people talk about, you know, that if you took one small step off the path, you could, you know, lose your soul or something. There's something embedded in that teaching that just prevents actual, you know, the Eyes Wide Shut thing, to actually open your eyes and start to look at this stuff.
Yeah. You want to be like, you know what scapegoat means? You know where the term scapegoat comes from? You know the roots of Christianity?
It's interesting because I think when you start having this conversation, it's automatically assumed that you're, you know, either an atheist or trying to, you know, chip away at their faith or something. I think that's where a lot of the defensiveness comes in. And just, I'm saying this just from experience, that's what I perceive. Like, I have some empathy for it. It's like, you know, you could, like, their whole shtick is wrapped up in this. So, you know, even, okay, so I guess if this is, Jay's not on the line, and it looks like this is where the conversation's going, huh?
Yeah, let me reboot this, because you're kind of breaking up, and we'll just keep it going, okay?
All right.
You sound crunchy.